This is EdTech Weekly. I'm Ricky Zager, and with me, as always, is Matt Harrison. Matt, today on the show, we're going to talk about another teen who's charged with a felony for hacking. Our attention spans apparently are getting shorter than goldfish because of technology, and you can walk through a Van Gogh painting now and also share a URL with only a sound. Any thoughts before we break down the news of the week?
What was that first story again?
Yeah, another felony. Yes, that's right. And also, guess what? I think it's probably best that you said that we do start with our story about our attention span problems. Well done. Nice segue. Engadget's reporting that a Microsoft study has found that tech is shortening our attention spans. Apparently, our attention spans are now shorter than goldfish. I've never thought of goldfish as masters of attention. So does this spell trouble for the human race, Matt?
I don't believe so. I think we're going to make it.
You don't think we're going to be taken over by goldfish?
I think it'd be a hilarious parody film. Don't think it's going to happen.
I would sign on to that film. I would love to be a part of that. We should definitely think about doing that.
All fish are played by Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, come on. He overacts. I don't like it. We also sort of have some good parts about this where we actually are improving our ability to multitask. We're deciding, hey, we don't really need this much attention. So it's not all necessarily a bad thing, is it?
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I think the article itself, it's glad that they found a nice silver lining in the story for us. But, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things that I think any generation, you can look back in the past 10 years and find something that was wrong with it. You know, back in my day, I, you know, walked up hills both ways in the snow and the rain, monsoons and whatnot. You know.
Well, but your attention span was so long that could happen.
Well, yes, you were probably, you know, lucid dreaming while you were doing the walking, and that's why all these things were happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, you know, they also go into detail talking about how, you know, if you spend a lot of your time on social networks, it's going to make things worse overall. I don't see this as a surprise in any way. I think that's probably what most people would say if you ask them, hey, do you think spending a lot of time on social media is going to be good for you in the long run? Yeah, I don't think so. What about an educational perspective for this, Matt? I mean, this is an ed tech podcast. Is there anything that we can use this for education to sort of help, you know, people who are either creating lesson plans or anything like that, interacting with students? How can this help them?
You know, standing from the outside of education, I think it really brings the perspective of highlighting the need for teachers and students to find more common ground for communication. We're living in an age where we have to kind of do a lot of things, you know, to engage with, you know, our audience, and we need to find new and better ways of doing it. And I think creative teachers are going to find a way to do it, and I think creative students who want to be more engaged in learning are going to do it, and you're always going to want to learn from those instances and those people that are able to do that. I think we should use more common sense approaches. I don't know that from an educational perspective, we need to start doing large-scale deployments of super-duper expensive things, you know, to try to catch the attention and make something fashionable, you know, that they can carry around or what's sitting inside of the, you know, classroom. It really comes down to just using common sense and finding a new and improved ways of communicating with people. You know, 10 years ago, a teacher said, oh man, all my students are on MySpace. I better create a MySpace account. That's going to really help out. That's not going to be the answer. You have to find a much better approach.
Yeah, I don't think you target them for where they're spending time. And I think you're right on that. I think this is one of those scenarios where you look at this and say, in general, the human race is having issues with attention span. So, you know, we have to be more creative, like you said, and we have to find an approach that's going to actually be meaningful for the way that, you know, students in this generation consume content. It is not a, you know, this is the age of autoplay videos that you start to see and you know within a few seconds if you're watching this video or not. And I think that's sort of a way that, you know, from education or teacher perspective, you're going to have to look at things like that. You better get to the heart of what you're talking about pretty quickly, especially if you're using videos or anything like that, because they're going to lose interest pretty quickly if it's not there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we move on to our next story. CNET reports about a VR competition, virtual reality, to find creative uses, and had a submission that allows users to walk through a Van Gogh painting. With the recent excitement surrounding VR, I've heard a lot in the news of like the Oculus Rift and some of the other headsets that are coming out. I think Google has one recently that's made out of cardboard. Is that right?
I think so. I'm not.
Yeah, I just saw something in the news about that today, that they're trying to do like a lower entry level sort of way for people to get involved in virtual reality. But are we scratching the surface of what this could mean for education here, Matt?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is probably one of the biggest areas, you know, that there's opportunity for students and teachers alike to create meaningful, engaging content to be shared with anybody. It's not like, you know, in the 1950s and 60s where you write a really good short story and it kind of gets chronicled into your library. You could create something using VR or for VR that can go across the world in a matter of seconds and impact so many people so quickly.
Yeah, I think probably people that are of the ilk of, you know, technology bad, probably going to say, well, this is going to stop people from actually experiencing things in the real world. You know, why would you want to go to an art exhibit if you could just walk through it in VR? But you're not going to get that same, you're not going to get what Van Gogh was hoping to accomplish for you seeing his art necessarily in this different format. But to those people, I would say, pshaw. I mean, I wouldn't say that, but I'd say, you know, this is a way for people who wouldn't normally be able to interact with stuff to be able to interact with it.
Yeah. And it seems like a crazy analogy, but look at Gran Turismo, the video game for the PS3 and PS4. Playing that game does not make kids less likely to want to buy, you know, a really, really nice car. It gives them the ability and the appreciation of those vehicles to go out and buy one later in life. Again, probably not a straight one-to-one, but
it gets people excited about it. I mean, I think you could see a student who may see a Van Gogh painting through VR and be like, man, I want to go to an art exhibit now and see what that really looks like, you know, how he painted it. I mean, I think you're right. I think it gives it that extra sort of excitement into that genre and maybe something that you would normally have not really been into. I think a lot of times our tech stories come down to that for education, you know, a gateway of interest in seeing, hey, this is something that I'd really like to learn more about. I mean, I think of sort of the ways that you can go with this sort of technology VR. I mean, first person perspectives of certain jobs, perhaps stimulating interest in those different professions. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be great for jobs. They already do this flight simulators for pilots. They do it for a bunch of other, you know, different things as well. They use simulations to figure out traffic. There's a really great game out there through Steam called City Skylines, I believe, where basically you are a city planner, and it's probably one of the biggest games of the past year. That's not necessarily VR, but they're talking about a VR component that can come with it. For me personally, I would love to see something that I could interact with the ocean floor because I just love that stuff. And then learning about virtual robotics, you know, how is something going to interact in a virtual experience that you've built a program for and now you're interacting with the robot itself. Again, I think it goes back to what we talked about several weeks previous about, you know, the Raspberry Pi and other things like it. Technology like this is really going to create more and more need for a creative class of people to come out and develop things that we can all experience in almost real time. You know, this Van Gogh painting that you can walk through, I highly doubt is going to be a final version of any Van Gogh painting you can ever walk through. It's a great stepping stone and creates an interest not only for Van Gogh, but for someone to create the next walkthrough of a great painting.
Yeah, it's exciting to see where this could go for education and in other ways as well. But it's definitely something that I think is going to be a major part of education in the coming years. So it's pretty exciting. Okay, our next story. In Gadget Reports, this is a story you're going to love, Matt, that a teen was arrested for breaking a whole school district's internet. That's right. Took the whole internet down for the school district. Apparently, he paid a third party to create a DDoS attack, essentially taking every part of the district's internet down, halting standardized testing, and also limiting payroll functionality. That's a little scary. This teen is most likely going to be charged with a felony, and although we had a student several weeks ago threatened with a felony because he changed the screensaver on his teacher's computer, I'm guessing, Matt, you think this probably actually warrants a felony? Yes?
I think it warrants a felony because if you know what a DDoS is, then you know how impactful it is.
Yeah, well, before we get into what a DDoS is, I mean, how do you know people to pay to do this? I mean, there's a whole lot going on here. This guy's involved. There's is somehow involved. I wouldn't know who to pay to do a DDoS attack. I mean, like, there's got to be a little bit more something seedy going on here besides just that. But so, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, this is way more nefarious than looking over your teacher's shoulder and finding out that his password is Paul.
Last name, you know? Or something. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so a DDoS, for those who don't really know what that is, it's a distributed denial of service attack. And the way I would explain it, Matt, and I'll have you kind of touch this up and make it probably more correct, but to me, it's just people are getting access to a bunch of machines to try to hit a web server and give it so much traffic that it shuts down. Is that basically the idea there?
Yeah, that's basically the idea. If you've ever had your computer taken over at some point by a, you know, malware or a bot or a virus, especially if you've had Windows, I don't know why, especially, it's pretty much, if you've had that happen, you've had Windows. basically, they kind of take control and you start, you know, pinging different places, and they'll come up with big nets and they'll come and do that. SYN floods. I work in web hosting. This happens a lot. So for me personally, I think that the school is somewhat at fault, because if you're able to get your servers hit like that for such that long a period of time and you don't have anybody watching over it, you're doing a disservice to every student in that school district and teacher.
Yeah, it's, you know, clearly this is going to become easier and easier for people to do. Hopefully also the security is going to get better to stop these type of attacks as well as we progress. But, you know, I could see somebody who really doesn't want to take standardized tests maybe, you know, thinking, boy, I wish I could shut it down. But the prospect of actually going out there and paying someone and knowing someone to do this is pretty bad. You talked a little bit about it, but are there, you know, basic ways that schools or districts can help prevent these type of attacks?
There's a ton of software you can use. Most servers are probably Linux-based, and if you're using CentOS 6.6, actually it goes all the way down to 5. Same thing with Ubuntu, Red Hat. They all have something called Fail to Ban, and it's this tiny little piece of software that sits on the server, and you can set parameters. We use it a lot for our company, where if I have 50 connections that are all coming from one IP hitting the exact same area in the server, it'll actually cut all transmission with that IP for 5 minutes. If they come back and do the exact same thing, it'll bolster it, so on and so forth, until basically we ban it. If you have intelligent system administrators, they can see this coming from a mile away. You're going to have somebody who tiptoes, they're going to hit it a couple of times and find out what's going on. You're not going to notice a whole lot unless you really know what you're looking for. But once you see it, you can see the progression from server to server to server. So if somebody's getting DDoSed like this, the kid must have not paid a whole lot, or he could have paid a ton. It's really going to have the same effect if you don't have anybody to actually protect you.
Okay, so yeah, so basically in that situation, you're saying if somebody is really monitoring it with software and people watching it at the same time, you're going to need a pretty sophisticated DDoS attack. Whereas if nobody's paying attention, you know, I don't want to say any schmo, but just about anybody who understands how to do that could make it happen.
Oh yeah. I mean, we have clients that, I actually have one client that we just migrated from one data center to another one. And he said, for the past 2 years, I've had the exact same IP trying to SYN flood me. And you know, trying to do stuff like that. And all we do is just kind of, you know, we have them blocked off. He's not really harming anything. And then we have other customers who have no idea what they're doing, and they're just getting hit, bombarded by one person who has, you know, 30,000 connections open on their server.
Yeah. And at the end of the story, and I found this a little bit silly, but Engadget says, let this be a lesson to you, students. You can never, ever escape standardized tests.
Yes, that's the lesson.
That's, you know, let's just leave it at that. That's, it, you know, clearly that's not the lesson. I think that's pretty tongue in cheek, so to speak, with them. But, you know, this is something that needs to be discussed with our kids. Clearly, if students are able to find people and pay people that are doing this type of stuff, it's getting a lot more common knowledge. And I think, you know, we're going to get behind the eight ball here if we don't get out ahead of this and start really, really pushing for some sort of education with students about all of this stuff and explaining to them why this is not a good way to go and what the ramifications are. It's a pretty scary it's a pretty scary circumstance that somebody in high school can, you know, orchestrate this type of an attack.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, not knowing what the follow-up from the last story was, I was going to bring up the fact that that kid looked like he was going to get Fed Pen time, and this guy's getting 180 days in juvie. Like, that just seemed bananas to me.
Yeah, there's... Because with the new sort of computer crime, cyber crime kind of stuff, I feel like they're really not sure how to police that yet, you know, and there needs to be a lot of work done in that area too. Yeah. All right. Final story of the week. CNET reports, I think one of the coolest stories of the week for sure, a Chrome extension for the Chrome browser allows you to share URLs by sharing just a tone. You and the person you're sharing the tone with need to have that Chrome extension installed, but it's pretty cool stuff. I mean, it seems something like an audio QR code. Is that right?
Yeah, no, it sounds amazing. I mean, to be able to share something, you know, with only a tone coming from your laptop into the person next to you and their laptop. That sounds awesome.
I don't know if it sounds amazing. Let's hear what fortechteachers.com sounds like. Yeah, that to me isn't that amazing, but it really sounds a lot like, to me, the old school, like, you know, dial up modem sort of tones. I mean, this is a way back in the day when people used to actually hack into systems using the phone company. Before internet, where they would use tones and know what those tones meant, and they could hack in and get like free long distance calling or anything like that. So it's really just a way to communicate, but it just sort of, I feel like it's kind of has gone by the wayside a little bit. It's not used as much in communication, but this is a pretty awesome thing to bring back. I know as a teacher, when I would be in a computer lab and getting every student in the computer lab to be on the same URL to get started could take literally 5 to 10 minutes of, no, wait, you don't have the slash. Oh, wait, you know, that's the backslash. Oh, you know, oh, you didn't put the dash in there. I mean, it really, like, if this works well, and I think this is just sort of a beginning version of it, but if this works well, this could really be pretty cool for a lot of uses, but certainly education. If you could just share a URL, boom, they click a button, they're there. That would save a lot of time and a lot of headaches, I know, from a teacher's perspective.
That would save a ton of time, period.
Yeah, in general, that would be pretty awesome. Well, what I'm going to do is actually put our links to the show in audio form at the end of the show. So if you're a real tech head and want to try it out, get the Google Chrome extension and play at the end of the podcast here, and you can get to those links and report back and see how it works. Again, edtechweekly@gmail.com. That's the email address. Still waiting for that first email. Well, second email, I guess, because we did get one from Meredith. Tip of the week. So here we go. Lifehacker reports that Hoopla Digital now allows you to check out ebooks and comics for free with a library card. It's a great resource to share with teachers and also your students, especially coming up on the summer here. Anything to get students to be reading more. I mean, even if it's comic books, let's be honest. I mean, we kind of want students to be reading it as much as possible. More access to free content, that's a good thing. So check that out. Matt, did you see how the process worked from this free ebook, or how they can do that?
Actually, I had not gotten a chance to fully go through that yet.
Oh, no. You know what? This is why you didn't get the $15 Google Play Store card. Putting in the extra work. You might still get it. You don't know. Well, so basically how it works is you go to Hoopla Digital on the web, or you can download their app. And if you have a public library card, and it's one of like 786 supported public library systems, so most likely if you have a library card, this is going to work. And there sometimes can be limits to how many books that you can have out at a time, of course. But, you know, you either download that app or you go to Hoopla Digital website and, like I said, put your library card in there and you can start checking out free comic books and free ebooks. Really a great resource to share with your teachers and students, especially, like I said, as summer is coming up. Well, Matt, the end of another great show. I'm looking at our Podbean analytics, and I am more than happy to report at this point in time, Matt, we have been listened to in 4 different countries: USA, Canada, Brazil, and the Republic of Korea. That's right. We are an international sensation. Well, not sensation, because the numbers are pretty low on listenership, but we're definitely listened to worldwide. We can say that now.
I have more listeners than my dad does on his podcast.
And that is important. We certainly don't want to get below his listeners. Now, should we mention his podcast to get people there?
He does not have one.
So what you're saying is we have more than zero.
That is progress, people.
I'm loving it. Matt, thanks again for coming out and doing the podcast with me. We'll see you again next week for the EdTech News of the Week.